All right, welcome back. Dennis Stuckey show here on WPHM on a Monday afternoon. I slid the break around there so that we could fit Mike Emmerich in at the at 5:30, because that's when Doc said he had to be on the air, and I do anything that you say.
Oh, my. I was more than willing to wait until after Jennifer Koshenka and the stock market or whatever. Is Paul Harvey's? No, I'm
no.
sad. I'm so sad that that's not the case anymore. But that's
well, at least your other buddy isn't on anymore.
Yeah, I know. Well, how are you?
I'm doing very well.
So this team from Carolina, I heard you say they've only lost 9 games one way or the other all year.
It's actually fewer than that. They were 49-5-1 or something like that? 49-6-1?
Yeah. Well, there is that magical time that we're in the middle of with the NHL playoffs where all of a sudden curses can arise. So maybe that's something that can happen to benefit the Prowlers. At least they get the first game at home.
Yeah.
and they did beat them at home recently, right?
The numbers are gory, actually.
I would imagine if a team has won that many games, they would be.
Yeah, 2-7-1 was the Prowlers' record. Both Prowler wins came in extra time. They had a shootout win in Carolina where the shootout actually took place before the game in an FHL experiment.
And that didn't last?
That didn't last.
I remember you telling me about the experiment, and the first time that it happened, they won with it, so that didn't last very long.
No, yeah. Once Carolina lost, they're apparently making the rules this season. So, and then the other Prowler win was an overtime win where they did win 5-4, but they blew a 4-1 lead in the last 6 minutes of the game. And then they got a fortunate call in overtime, got a power play, and scored a quick goal. But the last time the two teams met was at McMorrin, and Carolina won the game 11-2.
Okay. Here's a grenade for you. If this were the Southern Pro League and Carolina had its pick of opponents of either the number 3 or number 4 team, would they pick Port Huron?
I think they would. Historically, and they've only been in the league 2 years, but historically, they play better at McMorrin Arena than any other team in the league.
Really?
They were the team that was the thorn in the Prowler's side last year.
I see.
They ended the win streak, and they were the they beat them twice in overtime during the unbeaten streak.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And all of those games took place at McMorrin Arena.
Well, there is a mountain to climb then, isn't there?
Yeah, I'm not saying that an upset can't happen, because you know how in the minor leagues, Doc, all of a sudden rosters from the regular season to the team you face in the playoffs are often very different.
Yes, does the name Gilmore Tuttle come to mind with the Syracuse Bulldogs? Running the donut shop out west.
Yep. Yeah.
No, I understand that is how it happens. And strangely enough, years ago it did happen with the Toledo Gold Diggers, and it's what it is. It even happens in the NHL. I remember a Minnesota North Stars team that only won 2 of the last 8, and they faced the Chicago Blackhawks, the President's Trophy champions, in the first round. Got no chance, but they eliminated them in 6 and actually got to the Stanley Cup final. There are strange things that happen in these 3 days between the end of the season and the start of the playoffs, and all of a sudden teams that had some magic, well, it doesn't carry over, and some teams that had nothing all of a sudden realize that all the hit crossbars and all of the injuries and everything else, if they're healthy going in, maybe they got a chance because they qualified, and that's all you have to do is qualify.
Well, don't you think it would be the biggest story of the playoffs if Tampa, a team that won 60 and seems to be the favorite in a very tough East, were to suddenly lose to the Columbus Blue Jackets, who have never won a playoff series? Wouldn't that be considered? I know Columbus is a good team, but wouldn't that be considered one of the biggest upsets of all time?
Yeah, it certainly would be, because you have, I realize they haven't played in 2 months, but if you just look at the set scores of the 3 games, 8-2, 4-0, 5-1 in the regular season, but John Tortorella is going to throw a 19-year-old into the lineup, and as soon as I mention that, I have to scavenge to find his name, but I will wager one thing: he's probably 6'3" and 215. One of the advantages that Columbus has that, in my mind, makes them probably one of the teams that Tampa Bay would not like to see in the first round is that they like to play physical, and they do have Boone Jenner, and they have Josh Anderson, and they have Foligno, and they have guys that are of size and are not afraid to use it. And Tampa Bay does have highly skilled forwards, but not all of them are 6 feet. As a matter of fact, there are four of the better ones that are not quite 6 feet. And so that represents, if I'm coaching Columbus, that's one of the things I'm going to do is use my size if I can. But this is a team that racked up a lot of points for a reason. And so if that's why they... As an old broadcasting partner of mine named Hank Stram said, that's why they blow up the footballs, and hopefully to the appropriate poundage of pressure, Patriots, and that's why they put on the helmets. And so we will see, but it is, you know, they haven't lost to the Blue Jackets in 2 years, actually over 2 years. And all of those things are just set up for a scary first period of the first game down in Tampa, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh,
you know, how many times have we seen this, Dennis? In every league where a team is such an overwhelming favorite, and then the first period of the first game is just scary as all get out. Same thing happened with Columbus last year in Washington. And they won the first two games and the second one in overtime.
And
it was not supposed to be, but it sure was. And they had them going into overtime in Columbus in the third game, and it took two overtimes, and Washington finally won, and they never lost any more in the series against Columbus. But those are all things that make this such a great time of year, because everybody's 0-0. It gives, as a Pirate fan and a Tiger fan, it gives me hope every April. We had a guy today on the Pirates infield named Newman. And God bless him, he tries. But Alfred E. or Paul would probably not have made three errors in one inning. The last Pirate to do it was in the year 1900.
Wow.
And when I called you, it was 10-0 Cubs going into the ninth inning.
Ouch.
So you will undoubtedly find good, hilarious fodder for tomorrow morning's show if you decide you want to venture outside the Tigers, who are a lot of fun right now.
Well, they are. I was just kind of going over how the numbers don't make sense, but, you know, because they're hitting 181 as a team, but the pitching is doing well.
Now, it's the big equalizer, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just like goaltending.
But you know what will happen is the hitting will come around, and that's when the pitching will fall off.
Yeah, oh, and I know, and hitting tends to do that. But given the choice, I'd rather have good goaltending than good scoring, and I'd rather have good pitching than good hitting. I'm not saying that those are the more fun games to watch for most paying customers, but they do tend to have greater success.
All right, how about Toronto-Boston? Is this the year Toronto finally gets by these guys, or does Boston have their number?
Well, what we've been talking about with teams that stagger down the stretch and are the underdogs would have to happen for Toronto to do that. They only won three of their last 10. And Boston had it going really well down the stretch. And by and large, for Boston, they don't have serious, serious injuries. This is a team that always plays hurt and always has around 300 man games missed to injury. But, you know, down the stretch, they're not too bad. They're going to be okay, probably. And Toronto, even the goaltending has not really been that strong. Anderson was still pretty checkered going into these last few games. So you're really believing in the Angels in the outfield and the magic of these 3 days separating the regular season and the playoffs if you like Toronto in this series. But stranger things have happened, and you would really have to be believing that if you thought that Toronto would be able to do it.
Nobody's talking about the defending champs. Is that a good thing for them?
Probably is, but Carolina is a team that has gotten shielded by all of the post-game celebration, jerk stuff this year, And what that has taken away from is Sebastian Aho having a wonderful year, a terrific job done by Rod Brind'Amour as coach. The tools for this team to be as strong as they were actually in place under the Ron Francis regime. And that's one of the things that easily gets lost when you have a complete changeover and then all of a sudden you arrive. You think, oh, well, this is the new regime and the new owner and everything like that. But, Justin Williams made a big difference coming in terms of leadership. That was a smart move. But Aho had 83 points this year. Tara Vinen had 76. Michael Furland is enormous and is big and bulky, and he is the Tom Wilson nemesis. You have to have one of those, and you have to have an anti-missile, and that will be interesting to see in either the first game there or the first game in Carolina. It's been since forever when we talked about Carolina being a playoff name. So if they don't scare Washington in the first game there, they will undoubtedly do so in the first game in Carolina. It doesn't mean they'll win, but this is a team that can easily be taken for granted because they're off almost everyone's radar except Washington's right now. You can bet that the athletic department for the Capitals are preparing, but I don't know that they have the fans worried very much.
Yeah, and this is a team, too, that you look at, they let go Staal, they let go Skinner, and actually they're a playoff team now. And isn't it the last two times they've been in, Doc, they've gotten to the finals?
Yeah, go figure. In 02 and 06, and then they won the thing in 06 in a seven-game series against Edmonton. Eddie Olczyk was just talking earlier today and says that he would put the five best defensemen for Carolina against any five in the league. That's saying something. If you take the 16 best D in the league, that's saying an awful lot, because there are some teams in the league that I like their defense. I like St. Louis's defense. I don't know if I go five deep, but I certainly go three or four. And Nashville, I'd go at least three. But he likes their five better than any other five in the league. So that made me wake up and take notice. That and horses. If he talks about horses, I'll go with that. He's going to take an absence from us for all three Triple Crown races, so we'll miss him for that. But he likes their defense, and it's written in gold Gothic, and it's hanging on the east wall of McMorran, and it has Morris Snyder's name underneath it, defense and goaltending win playoffs. And, of course, it was said by just about everybody else who's come down the pike that's won before, that you pay attention to that at this time of year. And Mrazek has been a wonder, hasn't he? In a different uniform, different location, it's made a difference, and it's made a difference for his team. I'm not sure if he's going to be the guy that gets the start, or whether it'll be McElhain. Probably Mrazek you'd start with. I mean, 23 wins against 20. And isn't it interesting to hear Grapes still stoning the Maple Leafs for not having McElhain? Yeah, we all pay attention to what he says. We may not agree, but we always listen.
Yeah, because he's always got something to say that's interesting. Are the Islanders for real?
Yeah, they are, and that defensive style is going to cause Pittsburgh fits. And so this is going to be something comparable, although we're in a different era of hockey and we're in a different era when it comes to calling restraining fouls. This is going to be something like the fleas on the dog causing him just all kinds of havoc. And I know how much you love the Penguins, Dennis. But this is going to be similar to what it was when the Devils played Pittsburgh in the mid-90s. Not the same kind of restraining fouls, but the same kind of defensive scheme against an offensive scheme. They're going to start Martin and Casey Cizikas out there. That'll be the opening face-off at home at the loud, wild, and wacky Nassau Coliseum and Cal Clutterbuck, and they'll just go boom, 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 and probably Mike Sullivan won't start his best players because he knows that it'll be the hammer guys that'll come out and start the first game. That'll be fun to watch, just to see the contrast in style, similar to what we should see with Columbus and Tampa Bay. I don't know who will win, but it's more up for grabs than you might think. Pittsburgh has the credentials and are used to going long, And the Islanders have the game plan, and they have Barry Trotz and the guys to implement it. And they don't have John Tavares, but they didn't seem to miss him.
Out west, I'm kind of looking at these series, and I think St. Louis and Winnipeg interest me the most. What's the most interesting series for you?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, but why? What interests you about Winnipeg? St. Louis interests me because they won 8 of the last 10, and they were hot down the stretch, and they got a tremendous coaching job from Craig Berube. But at this point, I didn't know if anybody was going to wind up doing anything in the potential competitors that St. Louis would have.
Yeah, I thought Winnipeg was the team that should have been in the finals last year playing Washington.
Yeah.
And I just want to see how they respond in the playoffs this year. And this is like a really tough first series. Not that any of the series would have been easy, but this St. Louis is going to be, and I know the Blues have a history of choking, but this is going to be tough.
Yeah, it will, but this is a different St. Louis team, and they have the goalie. Until he's proved fallible, and it could be that Jordan Binnington may be proved fallible by the noise in Winnipeg, although he seems like an unflappable guy. He has come from a situation where they didn't even have a place for him to play last year, so they assigned him to Providence in the American League, the Bruins farm team. And then this year he started in San Antonio, and they lost one of the first. They only won one of the first 11 games, and so they decided, well, let's play the guy. Then they started winning, and then the Blues, of course, staggered, and they fired the coach, and they decided, well, let's bring this guy up. And then they started winning, and Jake Allen was always an up and down sort of question mark, and Jake got a chance to, you know, get his game together and rest, and now he's become pretty much a strong guy, especially away from St. Louis. And Binnington has just been a marvel. So until proved wrong, I like St. Louis in this series against Winnipeg because Winnipeg didn't show me much down the stretch, and unless they pull it together over these 3 days, despite the crowd and despite their regular season credentials, I think that St. Louis is the team on the move and on the fly, and so I like them.
Okay, how about Dallas-Nashville? Who do you like there?
Well, Nashville has the D, and Dallas had the D in the regular season, and so I think that this Dallas defense is going to show Nashville something, but for some reason or other, Dallas has been away from the playoffs for a long time, and I think the adjustment is going to be hard for them. It's only on a hunch. I mean, Dallas was, what, number two in team defense this year in the whole 31-team fiefdom?
And still, when somebody says Dallas to me, I think of Ben and Sagan instead of thinking of their D.
Yeah, and the early season flustering remarks made by one of the hierarchy from Dallas criticizing them, and boy, did they ever rally well. I hope they show me something different, but I do like the credentials of Nashville. And as mentioned earlier, I like their D man-to-man, down to at least three and maybe four people on defense. And so that leads me to feel that Dallas is the second-best team in that series. But boy, am I ever willing to be proved wrong. I think the goaltending is going to be a check mark for both teams. I'll give the edge to Ben Bishop based on his consistency during the year. There was only one guy that, in my mind, was more consistent, and he's the guy that wears number 88 in Tampa.
Yeah. Rene, I haven't seen a lot of Predators games, but Rene seemed human this year time to me.
No, you're right. And I think the defense in front of him is probably better than what Bishop has in front of him man-to-man, but Bishop has been the better goaltender, and he has been the distance with Tampa. The Lightning can always argue if Tyler Johnson wasn't playing with a broken wrist and Ben Bishop wasn't playing with a torn groin, do we go beyond six games against Chicago in 2015? It's one of those hypothetical questions that is always fun to discuss, but they lost.
All right. Vegas got in, but I need the Sharks to get to the Cup, Doc, because I need a second-round pick for Nyquist.
Yeah, it it'll be a fun series, let's put it that way. It'll be worth staying up late, even for you. It'll be worth staying up late to watch, because it'll be lots of goals. I don't know that, despite Marc-Andre Fleury's excellence and his ability to stop pucks, I think it's going to be a high-scoring series because both have high-octane offenses, both have top-scoring lines that are wonderful, and I think, you know, there are people with proverbial cigars out the corner of their mouths and statistical research in their hands that go to places like Vegas and lay down money on things like this, but I think that the large cash is going to go to big numbers in this series. I think they're going to be a lot of high-scoring games.
All right. And in the Colorado-Calgary series, are they going to talk more about Goodrow, McKinnon, or the Avs if they get the first pick in the draft and they can have, like, Hughes with McKinnon?
Yeah, well, Hughes would be wonderful, but they really have the depth of 1.5 lines in my mind. But I think going into this series, they have the better of the two goaltenders. You know, Mike Smith has been checkered this year, similar in my mind to what Frederik Andersen has been with Toronto. And, of course, you know, you can't deny what Colorado has gotten from their goaltending down the stretch, and that's in, you know, part what got them into the playoffs was the solid goaltending in key games. And I was just looking up the total of wins that Grubauer had, 18. But, gee, I thought he had more than that. But, boy, so many of them were key games down the stretch that I really like them in an upset. I know they've got to go into Calgary, and Calgary was the division leader, but Calgary did not impress down the stretch, and Colorado did. That's how they got in. I remember Scotty Bowman. See, this, Dennis, is the secret to how you get people to wake up when you're on long sentences like I am. You mentioned Scotty Bowman's name, and then people say, oh, Scotty Bowman, he's talking about Scotty Bowman. Scotty Bowman was saying at the end of one of those Red Wings seasons when they won their division and they were first place, and this was back in the days of 1-8, and he was being interviewed in Chicago after the last game of the regular season, and he said, you always have to be wary when you are a dominant first-place team because the team that finished eighth had to scrap and claw just to make it, and they're on a head of steam, which you have to manufacture very quickly for your first-round series. And I think that's the position that Colorado is in.
All right. Last question, Doc. How far away are the Red Wings?
Not that. Maybe one more empty year, but maybe not. Remember, the New Jersey Devils were fifth, were the number five, and they got the first overall pick. So we'll be a lot of Red Wings fans will either be laughing or crying later on tomorrow night. But this can happen. They can get Hughes. So this is all a matter of probability and statistics and how it all falls. But how far away are they? I don't think that far. I was very impressed with what they did down the stretch. I was impressed with how their old men played. And I'm being sarcastic. Larkin, 32. Athanasiou, 30. Mantha, 25. And some big goals in that stretch they had in the last 2 weeks. Bertuzzi, 21. That's not bad goal production when you consider what the first two-thirds of the season were like for them. So, no, I think there's a great reason to be hopeful, despite the fact they're in the Eastern Conference, which is tough, and they're in the Atlantic Division, which is tough. But I give them a great shot to either be in the playoffs next year or the year after. And having Howard around for another year is not bad. He was their MVP a year ago. You decide who the MVP was this year. I'd put it on one of the forwards. But I think having him around for another year is not a bad thing. And if they were a stock, I'd suggest buying, but that's me.
Okay. Well, then we're not far off on that.
No, you agree?
We just need to fix one thing, and that's up at the top.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about you. Okay. I understand.
Oh, it's great talking to you as always,
Same
Doc.
Here. Be good. Go right. Predators.
Thank you.
Go Prowlers. I'm sorry.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right. There's Mike Emmerich, as always, real good on the program today. Take a break and back with more. We're going till 7 o'clock. Don't forget, at 7:30, we start our coverage of the NCAA Men's National Championship game for college basketball right here on WPHM tonight.